Thank you very much. I am not Emery Simon. I don't play him on TV either. I'm Jesse Fader, Director of International Trade and Intellectual Property for the Business Software Alliance, and we appreciate the opportunity to speak here today. Before I get into my prepared statements, there are just two things that have come up in conversation so far that I would like to just touch upon. One was the suggestion by my esteemed colleague Kerry Sherman that we move back to a system of copyright where copyright owners have to opt in or assert their desire to be protected by copyright. I couldn't agree less with that with that suggestion. Not merely for the somewhat formalistic reason that it would violate the Berne Convention, it would. But also, I think it would be very regrettable if we were to return to a system of copyright where errors in filing papers or placing notice on a work or some other formal act result in a divestiture of rights. I think a much better model would be an opt-out model like we have with the Creative Commons, where a person can affirmatively state that they do not wish to assert their rights to collect royalties or assert their rights to prevent the use of a work. The other statement that I would just like to touch on is there was a discussion in Jamie's statement about the Berne three-step test. I'm not going to get into the technical details of where the three-step test does and does not apply. I would point out that the TRIPS Article 13, which has the same language as Berne Article 9.2, is somewhat broader in its application than the Berne three-step test. But just getting back to what is the three-step test? It says that you can't have exceptions except in certain special cases that do not conflict with the normal exploitation of a work, do not unreasonably prejudice the legitimate interests of the right holder. I think these are eminently sensible rules. So from a purely normative standpoint, I think that basically exceptions should be just that, exceptions. They should be exceptional, and they should be in cases that are not going to create undue harm to the right holder. It's really a matter of fairness. I'm here representing the software industry, and we are a copyright industry. We depend on copyright protection to drive innovation, to grow, and to create jobs, and we are damaged by copyright theft. By our estimate, last year, more than $50 billion worth of software was appropriated without appropriate compensation. Software industry is also a technology industry. We're vitally dependent on the freedom to innovate, and that includes freedom from preferences and mandates. It's a concept that we refer to as technology neutrality. Consequently, we feel that the software industry is well positioned to talk about the relationship between copyright and technological innovation. From our vantage point, the two are working well together and have historically done so. That's not to say that copyright law should never change or that we shouldn't perform a periodic stock taking like this study. We support studies like this. In fact, we are one of the sponsors of this effort. For example, it does make sense to consider new enforcement tools when technology renders existing tools less effective. We support creative ways to attack piracy, including piracy on the internet, even though that's not the primary problem that our industry faces. The primary problem that we face is simply businesses that use our software without paying for it. But whatever is done needs to be done in a way that does not interfere with the evolution of technology. Solutions should be balanced, and they should adhere to basic concepts of fundamental fairness and due process of law. Another issue that arises at the interface between IP protection and technology is standards policy. Unlike other copyright industries, our products are often implicated by standards, and we sometimes face demands to give up our IP rights in order to participate in standards-making processes. These demands are counterproductive. They do not promote innovation, and we oppose them. But generally, we find that many of the issues of copyright law and technological change are readily resolved and resolvable within the existing copyright framework. Part of the genius of copyright law is that at its core, it is about creating a property right, then stepping back and allowing private parties to order their relationship voluntarily through licenses and contract terms. This has allowed a multiplicity of business models to emerge and adapt to disruptive technological changes. There is a lot that the history of copyright law and its adaptation to disruptive technological change can teach us. What is past is prologue. It's almost trite to say it, but copyright began as a response to technological change and has been faced with technological change throughout its history. This is one subject area that is not mentioned in your prospectus that we would strongly encourage you to explore. Another, which I alluded to earlier, is the role of private ordering through license agreements in the actual functioning of the copyright marketplace. And this has come up earlier in Carrie's remarks. I would just remind you, though, that we're not just talking about blanket licenses for massive numbers of works. There is a broad spectrum in the licensing world, from blanket licenses all the way through to custom negotiated agreements for specific works. And all of that is part of a thriving copyright marketplace. So to gain an accurate picture of how copyright functions on a day-to-day basis, it's essential to look at the role of licenses in the marketplace. With that, I'll finish my prepared remarks and answer any questions.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that your members, people that share the research effort, the amount of money they would cover?
Well,
I mean, it'd be an interesting measure of tracking. Yeah. I mean, software firms are now routinely auditing and finding potential amounts of money. Interesting to have some transparency on that, you know, look at what's happening in this space.
Within certain parameters, I think they would be willing to share information, but there's, you know, issues of business confidentiality. As a technical matter, the fees that they receive from sales of software, that's all considered licensed in our industry. So basically, if you look at their revenues and subtract out hardware and services, what's left is license fees.
The question is, you know, non-compliance by their customers and paying license fees that is being caught in customer audits.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at that activity over time, I think would be an interesting data point for informing policy. Question is,
I can't answer that question. It's really a decision that the companies can make individually, but I'd be glad to work with you to get in touch with the companies.
You mentioned you know, having problems with standards making bodies insisting on, you know, essentially waiver of intellectual property rights. Do you know of any studies about the effect of that or economic effects of that that the committee might kind of point its mind to?
I'm not aware of any studies. Uh-huh. I can tell you the places where the issues have arisen. It's come up in China and more recently in the EU as part of their European interoperability framework exercise, which defines standards as being royalty-free.
I take it the BSA includes companies that are engaged in the video game market and the online distribution platforms that have developed. Is that right?
We do. Those issues are generally referred to, issues relating to that business are usually referred to another trade association, the Entertainment Software Association, ESA.
Okay.
We do have companies like Microsoft.
Here's the question that I have, and it may be better directed to them. But you know, one of the specific policies of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act was to provide companies the opportunity to use digital rights management. And I think the software companies have a tremendous amount of experience and have figured out sectors where such tools are working and where perhaps they're not feasible. Is there a way for us to get systematic evidence about the deployment of those tools and how central they are to the creative process, to the business models of your member companies?
Again, I would have to go back to the member companies with that question, because I don't have that information at hand. As you alluded to, the use of DRMs is more common in the gaming space than it is in the business software space. With business software, we typically have technological protection measures like online activation, so it's a one-off effort when you install software. I think we're going to see that evolve as more and more software functionality moves to the cloud, where you're working on a metered basis. At this point, our companies are don't have extensive just an extensive experience in the cloud model. They're all kind of in the process of developing cloud offerings, and different companies are at different stages. So that's all kind of a long way of saying I'd have to go back to the companies to get you further information on that.
This is Chris Brigman from the University of Virginia. So in your statement, I understand now the BSA's views at a pretty general level on the copyright system as a whole, but the most helpful thing to me would be more particularized recommendations for where we should focus research, so what kind of research we should be encouraging. Are there particular things that you think we should encourage research into that are undeveloped now?
Well, one in particular that I mentioned was the role of licensing and voluntary ordering of rights and responsibilities in the marketplace in driving innovation, in disseminating works more broadly to the public.
Right. So that's at a very high level of generality, right? So is there something more particular within that domain that you think you would like us to study, that you could help us find data on, anything that would be of general interest, but more particularized than that?
If you want me to get more specific, I'd have to give that further thought.
Well, we'd appreciate it, because our chart
glad to
recommend research projects, and as someone who does research projects for a living, we have to have a set of research questions that are trackable. So, we can't go forward unless we do. And these kinds of interactions with you and others are helpful to the extent that we can glean out from people out there in the world what it is that needs attention. So that the extent you can help us with that, that's great.
We'd be glad to help you with that.
Yes, you referred us back to your membership for some of the information you were asked about earlier. But I would like to know, what does BSA have in terms of data that it has collected that would help to inform us as to where we need to look? What kind of data have you collected that really is pertinent to the inquiries that we have in our mission?
We collect data on a couple of areas, but primarily on the size of the problem with software theft how much software is being used without authorization around the world. We do that annually. Every other year, we do a study that looks at the sort of the inverse of the economic impact. In other words, it uses a set of assumptions to predict what would be the increased economic activity, increased tax revenues, and increased employment if software piracy rates were reduced by, in our study, it's 10 points over a four-year period. We do that study every other year. We just recently came out with that. The other data that we use, that we come up with, are on more specific areas like cybersecurity, which really don't relate to this inquiry.
Pardon the interruption. Your conference contains...
We're also in the process of developing data that goes, that's very specific. It goes to the economic impact of piracy in China, and this is in part to assist the International Trade Commission in its current inquiry on piracy in China. And that's something that we don't have in the can. It's being worked on. It should be done by the end of the year.
And the data that you do have, would you be able to make that available to
Absolutely. Actually, it's on our
committee?
Website, but I'd be happy to make it available.
And would it disclose also the methodology that was used so we could sort of look behind it?
Each of our studies has a methodology section that discusses the methodology. And if you have further questions, we can arrange you to meet with the contractor who does this for us.
Just a quick follow-up to that. I've seen the study, and I know the $50 billion number, for example, presumes all the stuff that was stolen would have been purchased at market prices.
Let me just
to keep it quick, I know you have data on the quantities of unpaid stuff. Do you have data on the quantities of paid stuff by country, by year, that you could share with us or point to us so we could develop a research agenda that could get at the rate of sales displacement for software?
Well, rate of sales of software, that's actually one of the inputs into the study, and we can get that from our vendor, but we would have to get their permission to disclose it.
Thank you very much.